This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Friday, April 10th, 2009. I'm Caleb Brown. Adapting a surge strategy from Iraq to Afghanistan requires adapting to a dramatically different physical terrain, a much weaker central government, largely imaginary border between Afghanistan and Pakistan, and a NATO alliance that is hanging by a thread. Other than that, says Cato Institute legal policy analyst and former Special Forces officer David Ritgers, it's a fair comparison.
Well, they're very dissimilar in terms of the factors that made the surge a success in Iraq. Economically, the Sunni areas are resource poor. There's oil north in the Kurdish areas, and there's oil south in the Shiite areas, but there's no oil in the Sunni areas. So you can rent loyalty very cheaply in the Sunni areas. In Afghanistan, the reverse is true. The areas just around Kandahar and the Helmand and Oruzgan provinces, which is where a lot of the Taliban heartland is, are also the areas where opium poppy grows and very successfully. So that's actually a resource-rich area. So renting loyalty and porting the surge strategy with sons of Afghanistan parallel to sons of Iraq is very. That's stretching the economics of that to the breaking point. Second, let's take a look at how the terrain is in Iraq versus Afghanistan and where the population is in that terrain. In Iraq, there's two major rivers, the Tigris and the Euphrates, and the population is concentrated around those two rivers. So you can mass your forces and achieve a localized ratio of counterinsurgents to population that is successful. And in Baghdad, we had dozens of combat outposts that were within small arms range of each other and could mutually reinforce one another. So we basically provided community-oriented policing in Baghdad. And as Admiral Olson said, Iraq is like the state of New York. If you secure New York City, then you've secured New York. But Afghanistan is not like New York State. The population is spread out all over the place. A very small minority of it is in the major population centers. So to achieve that localized counterinsurgent to population ratio all over the country would not be done with mutually supporting small outposts working in partnership with Iraqi police and army troops. So you would have to have a massive commitment of troops on the order of, I think we would need 600,000 counterinsurgents total, counting host nation ones, but we don't have that, and I don't know how we'd get there with a surge of our troops. That would be all of the army. So the population density and concentration doesn't work. And in terms of terrain, the terrain in Afghanistan is absolutely unforgiving, and you can ambush a convoy from... you're at 7,500 feet above sea level, and you're running around with a pair of flip-flops, an AK-47, and 100 bullets. And you can be effective with that in Afghanistan more than you can in Iraq, because to come chase after you is absolutely daunting when American soldiers are wearing 60 pounds of gear high above sea level. It is tough, tough terrain. And finally, if you look at the social structure of Iraq, it's actually sort of a bonus to invade a country that was just under a ruthless dictator, because the people are much more consolidated politically. There was an accepted party structure, and one local political leader could speak for thousands of people. And also the people are somewhat immunized to the population control measures that a counterinsurgency can require. Whereas in Afghanistan, if you have a deal with one local leader, he speaks only for his tribe or his village or his valley. And the next valley is a whole different set of rules and a whole different ball of wax in terms of relating to that population. So these broad broker deals with former Ba'ath Party members or heads of large tribes will not translate to Afghanistan.
It's only recently that policymakers have gone public with the idea that a country like Afghanistan could be governed centrally from Kabul. What took so long, and why is there still this push for a surge?
Well, I think that the proponents of the surge are trying to push this strategy not not realizing the scope of the differences between the two countries. This is also partly because Afghanistan is seen as the good war in some people's eyes, and that this is a war that we cannot lose. But I think we have to come to the realization that Afghanistan, even when they had a monarch, it was not run as centrally and as concentrated in Kabul in terms of political power as advertised. And a lot of things, the lines that we've been sold from some of the ruling class in Afghanistan who want our presence to continue there simply aren't the case. The myth of a progressive women's rights movement in Afghanistan has been exposed as pretty false with the passage of recent legislation that would bar a husband from being charged for raping his wife in Afghanistan, and lays out pretty specifically how much attention she is supposed to show to him. And so all of the human rights and women's rights advocates that are saying that we need to go over and impose our values on them don't realize that that when what we talk about and call women's rights in many real senses are what they would consider property rights. And imposing our values will only generate ill will against us and support for the insurgency.
The first time Article 5 of the NATO Charter was ever used was on September 11th, 2001. NATO allies came to Afghanistan, broadly supporting that effort. Where do we stand now? And what of the quality of the alliance within NATO?
Well, when we write the history books about the war in Afghanistan, I hope this isn't true, but we may say that we lost the war on January 1st, 2006 and just didn't know it yet. That's the date that European forces, our allies, took over in Kandahar. There are two main military hubs in Afghanistan, Kabul and the Bagram and Kabul in the east, and then Kandahar in the south. The Europeans took over in the south in 2006, and to echo the sentiments of Ted Carpenter, they simply are free riders in NATO, and it's been ineffective for several reasons. First, in terms of capabilities, they just don't bring to the battlefield what Americans bring to the battlefield. And second, they have much more enthusiasm for drug eradication than American military leaders did and do. So they came in with Great Britain leading those allies, and Great Britain having just been appointed in mid to late 2004 as the lead country, the international drug czar, if you will, for drug eradication in Afghanistan. So they tried to actually go out and start eradicating poppies. This was done knowing that it was going to cause problems. And so they tried to parcel out the pain to the locals. And what ended up happening is that the people who locally were in power ended up keeping their fields, and certain tribes or groups within those regions paid the price. And those were the ones that lost portions of their crops. So it fell along tribal lines in those areas, people who wanted to fight us, and it has been very counterproductive. And finally, legally, they're much more restricted than we are. Our rules of engagement are broad enough that we can do what we need to do on the battlefield, whereas some of these European nations have caveats where dropping a bomb would require contacting their home country. Or it's been a report of in 2006 of a British unit that was in the field and identified some Taliban fighters and contacted a helicopter to go shoot at them because they couldn't reach them with the weapons that they had on the ground. And the aircraft were on a different subset of rules of engagement that were entirely defensive and had to get command approval to switch to rules of engagement, allowing them to shoot those Taliban fighters. So this meant that for the Taliban, that group of Taliban, to get engaged by the helicopters, they would have to be dumb enough to shoot at an attack aircraft so that the attack aircraft could fire in self-defense. Now, If you're fighting a counterinsurgency, you have to have the ability, once you identify the insurgent and separate him from the population, to attack him. And if you're playing a defensive set of rules, then you cannot win in a counterinsurgency.
What has gone correctly in Afghanistan?
Well, we've recognized that Afghanistan and the border regions in Pakistan are so closely linked that we have one ambassador, and Richard Holbrook is the AFPAC, or Afghanistan-Pakistan ambassador. And that's a good move structurally, where we're not going to be making promises to each of those two parties that the other ambassadors know about and can't keep. And he's also been a critic of the drug eradication that we have been doing in the South. And so hopefully that there will be some give on that and a move away from that, at least at the low level, so that we're not impacting the lives of these farmers, taking away their crop and driving them into the hands of the insurgency.
David Ritgers was a Special Forces officer in Afghanistan and is a legal policy analyst at the Cato Institute. You can read more of his work at cato.org.